Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist Trent Horn. And today I'm going to talk about two stories dealing with Catholic hospitals and so-called transgender healthcare. But before I do that, please be sure to like this video and subscribe to our channel to help us grow. And if you really want to help us out, then consider supporting us at TrenthornPodcast.com. There you can become a patron, get access to bonus content, including patron-only live streams available every Wednesday at 8:15 p.m. Eastern, 5:15 Pacific. Be sure to check all that out at TrenthornPodcast.com. All right, so last week, the Lepanto Institute released a report on Catholic hospitals offering so-called sex change operations for their employees. Here's what the Daily Wire said about it. America's largest Catholic healthcare network covers sex change operations for employees who identify as transgender, according to a new report. Common Spirit is America's largest Catholic nonprofit health system. It was formed when Dignity Health and Catholic Health Initiatives merged in 2019 after going through an approval process involving multiple archbishops and receiving sponsorship from the Catholic Healthcare Federation. It goes on to list non-emergency treatments that are covered by the hospital healthcare plan, but that require pre-certification. The list includes transgender, gender dysphoria coverage, surgery. The document goes on to clarify that, quote, transition-related services to treat gender dysphoria or gender identity disorders include treatments such as, quote, medically necessary gender reassignment and reconstructive services. Meanwhile, quote, medically necessary hormone therapy is covered under the separate prescription drug plan, end quote. Now, this directly contradicts the doctrinal note the U.S. bishops released last March, which says the following: Catholic healthcare services must not perform interventions, whether surgical or chemical, that aim to transform the sexual characteristics of a human body into those of the opposite sex or take part in the development of such procedures, end quote. Last week, the U.S. bishops met in Orlando, Florida. One of the topics they would have hopefully discussed was updating the religious and ethical directives for Catholic healthcare. I recorded this episode before they met, so I don't know right now as I'm talking if that came up in their meeting, but there was a lot of talk about it online, about them voting to change the ethical and religious directives to reflect the March doctrinal note and how it talks about the, quote, moral limits to technological manipulation of the human body. What I'm concerned about is that some so-called Catholic bioethicists and theologians will say, well, the church needs to change its approach to transgender issues because the science says so. For example, theologian M. Thérèse Lasalt says, the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith has not yet issued a statement on transgender healthcare. I would guess that this is due to the fact that the issue is so new. Brian Massingale, an openly gay priest who teaches moral theology at Fordham, says, the hierarchy has had comparatively little time to absorb and reflect upon the findings in the human sciences about the complexity of gender and sexuality. And finally, Father Dan Horan, mini Father James Martin, who I previously talked about on the podcast because he thinks animals are people and it's a sin to misgender someone, he wrote an article that was simply entitled, Recent Transphobic Statements from Bishops Make Truth Claims Without Facts. And just what are these scientific facts that overturn what we've known about men and women for thousands of years? Lasalt, Father Horan, and Father Massingale don't tell us. But if they were pressed on the question, I bet they'd appeal to things like brain scan studies that purportedly show a transgender person's brain resembles those of the opposite sex which they identify with, or recent intersex diagnoses that show it isn't always easy to determine if someone is male or female. They would say that this shows that a person, well, they just might not belong to the sex they were assigned at birth. But sex is not assigned at birth. It is discovered at birth and oftentimes before birth through blood tests and ultrasounds. And just because a doctor might be mistaken and get the diagnosis wrong, it doesn't mean he is the one who determines whether someone is male or female. genetics and biology do that. Also, many of these arguments for transgender ideology conflate intersex cases that involve things like ambiguous genitalia or rare sex chromosome makeup with transgender identity. Transgender identity almost always manifests in someone who has clearly identifiable male or female genes and anatomy. Even in intersex cases, it's still possible to determine if someone is biologically male or female. For example, people with only one X chromosome and no Y chromosome are female, but they have Turner syndrome. This can lead to developmental and sterility issues. The same complications can arise for men who have Klinefelter syndrome. This happens when a man inherits more than one X chromosome, so when they're XXY or XXXY. Having an extra Y chromosome can cause men to have things like learning disabilities. But even in all these cases, we can tell there's a man and there's a woman. Even if there were a handful of hard cases where we weren't sure if an individual is male or female, that would not disprove the sexual binary that everybody else belongs to. Just as the rare, rare case of a breathing, brain-dead person doesn't disprove the fact that life and death are binary realities for the human person, and there is no third option or non-binary option between life and death. Now, in some cases, for those who are identified as intersex, corrective surgery might be needed to treat their condition. But it is not possible to use surgery to turn a man into a woman. All you would have is a procedure that has mutilated a man who claims to be a woman. One New York Times editorial from a man who underwent this kind of surgery to get vaginoplasty, which makes a front hole in place of the penis, it constantly tries to heal itself because it's unnatural. In an article about it, it says, "My new vagina won't make me happy." What about brain scans? Here is a video claiming that transgender identity is a scientific fact because people who identify as transgender in certain studies have brain structures that resembled the other biological sex that they identified with rather than their own biological sex.
Still, why would anyone purposefully subject themselves to a life of difficulty? Well, it's not a choice. It's who they are, and science can back that up.
One study published in the Journal of Neuroscience identified networks in the brain associated with gender.
Some regions of the brain show difference based on gender. In one study published in the Journal of Psychiatric Research, scientists used MRI techniques to scan the brains of 18 people who were assigned female but identify as male, and 24 male and 19 female heterosexual controls. The researchers found that the white matter of female to male individuals who received no hormone therapy more closely resembled brains of the male subjects than the female subjects.
The problem with this argument is that it assumes that men and women have dramatic brain differences, which is something, ironically, that feminists have been arguing against for decades and have said things like there is no female brain. I mean, if there were, that would justify saying women could be discriminated against because they literally have different brains than men. Even some transgender advocates consider these studies to be flawed because they rely on the idea that gender has a biological basis, which they deny. Here's how one author puts it. Recent work does significant damage to the idea that there are distinct, separate male brains and female brains at all. A research group led by Daphna Joel summarizes the findings of their meta-analysis that included brain images from 1,400 participants. Brains with features that are consistently at one end of the maleness-femaleness continuum are rare. Rather, most brains are comprised of unique mosaics of features, some more common in females compared with males, some more common in males compared with females, and some common in both females and males. So an essential premise of Baker's work on trans brains, that there are distinct groups of male brains, quote-unquote, and female brains, quote-unquote, in cisgendered people, to which we can compare the brains of trans people, is flawed. Even more important, the interpretation that Baker's results are a victory for trans kids actually threatens to undermine the acceptance of trans people generally. We don't need to validate trans identities via brain matter. We need to take trans people at their word when they express their genders, end quote. Other transgender advocates recognize this kind of argument is problematic for them because it can be used to justify treating transgender identity as a brain disorder. Here's a report from Reuters News Service.
A definitive biological cause would upend the argument of social conservatives who say that being transgender is largely a result of social factors. But at the same time, the whole line of inquiry is making transgender advocates squirm.
The trans community is concerned about stigma.
I spoke with Dr. Jack Drescher, a New York psychiatrist who is a leading voice on LGBT issues.
We don't know, you know, but there's certainly enough beginning of evidence that's beginning to emerge that there is some suggestion that at least in some people, there may be a biological component.
Other scientists are hesitant to declare a definitive origin to being transgender, mindful of the myriad biological complexities between cause and effect. Transgender advocates worry that if a cause is found, those opposed to transgender rights could propose a cure, opening the door to so-called reparative therapies.
Those who say science proves transgenderism have only shown that some people who have identity disorders, gender-related or otherwise, may also have identifiable brain abnormalities or deviations. The fact that these brains resemble the gender they identify with but don't match it is what we'd expect with someone who resembles something else in some respects, like certain preferences, but does not match it biologically. The fact that a man's brain may be similar to the average woman's brain in some respects does not prove that this man is really a woman. People with dissociative identity disorder, multiple personality disorder, have brain abnormalities. It doesn't mean they're more than one person. People who have Cotard's delusion think that they're dead, and they have brains which scans reveal have lower activity levels than average people. Maybe it's more similar to dead brains. They have lower activity. But of course, that doesn't mean that they really are dead. These arguments also indirectly prove that sex is biological, because the claim that a transgender woman's brain resembles a biological woman's brain shows there is a difference between transgender women and biological women. They both are not simply women. The only way one could make this claim is if there were already a reference class called biological women that you could determine empirically and scientifically for brain scan experiments. Finally, it's important to remember that these questions do require investigating scientific facts, but they aren't purely scientific or medical questions. They are ethical questions, so you need experts in ethics to guide you. So I found it surprising, well, not that surprising, to see the National Catholic Reporter deriding the National Catholic Bioethics Center's involvement with the U.S. bishops on this issue, given that the NCBC and Father Tad Boholcek, they're some of the best Catholic bioethicists out there. The article by Michael Sean Winters is called "Bishops Listen to Catholic Health Workers, Not Culture Warriors on Transgender Directives." On a side note, I hate the term culture warrior. It's a way to dismiss what someone has to say without engaging their argument or the reason for their advocacy. It's just lazy name calling. Also, it's inconsistent. I bet Michael Sean Winters does not call Catholics who oppose systemic racism or support Black Lives Matter culture warriors. So he talks about how the Catholic Health Association, CHA, gave suggestions for the bishop's doctrinal note on gender. Only the bishops have magisterial authority from Christ to teach on faith and morals, not doctors. Sometimes the bishops have to correct the doctors, especially on ethical issues. He then writes, "If the bishops' conference is not listening to the Catholic Health Association, to whom are they listening? My concern is that they are listening to the National Catholic Bioethics Center. Privately, more than one bishop has voiced concern to me that the current leadership at the center is more easily swayed by the culture war zeitgeist," end quote. And what is the culture war zeitgeist that Michael Sean Winters worries about? Here's what he says. "A visit to the center's website amplifies the concerns. The new president of the organization, Joseph Meany, issued a message celebrating the New York Supreme Court's ending of the vaccine mandate in New York State, stating, a big part of the reasoning behind the ruling was the now acknowledged scientific fact that the various COVID vaccines do not stop transmission of the disease. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention still recommends getting a vaccine, especially the bivalent version that better protects against the current iterations of the virus." One of the National Catholic Bioethics Center's ethicists, John DeCamillo, wrote an article for Legatus that got reprinted at the center's website. in which he stated, quote, "Given the varied ways COVID-19 impacts different regions, a vaccine mandate from federal or state governments would be too blunt an instrument. This would feed a lack of public trust," end quote. Winters then says, "In the face of a worldwide pandemic, concerns about small government are misplaced. Only a federal response was capable of combating the pandemic. It is talk like this that feeds the conspiracy theory culture that is the true source of a lack of public trust," end quote. No, Michael, what fuels conspiracies are when doctors lie to the public. Like when they lied about masks and said they weren't effective at the beginning of the pandemic in order to prevent shortages of them. Or when experts said we must censor theories about COVID coming from a lab, when now it turns out that's probably what happened. Or when doctors at the CDC closed schools because the teachers' union told them to, even though other European countries kept schools open without problems. Or when the CDC mandated masks for two-year-olds, even though the World Health Organization said toddlers should not be masked. Or when they made decisions about banning things like football on basically a whim. If anyone is a culture warrior, it's the National Catholic Reporter, who is always working in defense of the culture of modern leftism. Notice also that Winters doesn't show the NCBC was wrong in their advice, which, by the way, their advice mirrors what the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith says about vaccines needing to be voluntary. His only complaint is that it goes against the culture of modern leftism. Well, at least we know what side of the culture war he is fighting on. In closing, Catholic physicians should provide compassionate care to those who seek to change their gender, as well as to those who have undergone so-called gender reassignment surgery and tragically realize they were mistaken about their gender identity and now want to detransition. But they should never promote mutilation of the body in order to appease a culture that has lost its grip on reality, on especially the reality of us having been made male and female. Pope Francis put it well when he called gender ideology in a 2023 interview one of the most dangerous ideological colonizations. In a 2016 interview, Pope Francis said, "Today, children are taught in school that everyone can choose his or her sex. Why are they teaching this? Because the books are provided by the people and institutions that give you money. These forms of ideological colonization are also supported by influential countries. And this is terrible," end quote. So let's pray the U.S. bishops heed Pope Francis's warnings and work to keep Catholic hospitals a place where having a functioning reproductive system is never considered a pathology that needs to be destroyed at the hands of those who serve the ideologues of the day instead of those who should be serving the timeless wisdom of the ages. Thank you very much for listening. I hope this was helpful for you all. And yeah, I just hope that you all have a very blessed day.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.